All right, welcome back. Reginald Walker in a few moments. Neil Coulong and the demise of the Steelers in the next half hour. And it is a demise. That was a terrible game they played on Sunday. Today's show brought to you by Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Kia, Routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf, online at sunburymotors.com. Ford, Kia, Hyundai, the best in new inventory. Great pre-owned inventory. It is all a sales staff that works really hard with you, really hard, to take care of business. They want to make sure that you get the best deal. Your trading's never been worth more. Because, look, how do you get so much repeat business? Great products, a sales staff that actually works with you, right? And a service department that's great. Takes care of the life of the vehicle. Inspections, they're great at. Routine maintenance, great at. Tough stuff, great at. It's a great service department. It's all at Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Kia, Routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf, online at sunburymotors.com. So Carson Wentz is in COVID protocol, not vaccinated. So he is on the list. They are getting close, by the way, the NFL and the Players Association, to adopting the new CDC and prevention guidelines that would reduce the quarantine time to 5 days from 10. Now, the NBA's gone to 6. I think they're going to cut down to 5 as well. And that would include unvaccinated players. An agreement, by the way, could be done by today. It's unclear, though, if Wentz tested positive for the virus. He could be a close contact. If he did test positive, he'd be able to play Sunday against the Raiders as long as the positive test took place Monday and he's asymptomatic under the new guidelines that they're adopted. Under the current protocols, he would definitely miss Sunday's game. But with the new ones coming out today, it looks like he might not miss it. He did not shed any light on why he remains unvaccinated. He missed some time before the start of the regular season. It's not, the issue was not him, is that he was a close contact to someone who tested positive in the Colts organization. I'm not going to go into depth why, but I will say it's a personal decision for me and my family, he said in early September. I respect everybody else's decisions. So say he doesn't go. Well, rookie Sam Ehlinger would be the guy that would go from the practice squad along with Brett Hundley. Ehlinger missed the start of the season because of a knee injury, but is okay now. Interesting. So we'll see what happens with that. Next, the Jacksonville Jaguars have said that they're going to interview a couple of guys right out of the gate. They're going to interview my old friend Jim Caldwell. You remember when our kids were young, my son Mike and his son out at Lamont Elementary playing T-ball. And Jim and I would just sit together and just talk and talk and talk during the course of the T-ball games. So it doesn't take much to be a big fan of Jim Caldwell. He's being interviewed by the Jags, as is Doug Peterson being interviewed by the Jags as well. So they're getting that part underway. The Eagles are separating their quarterbacks. Jalen Hurts, Gardner Minshew, and Reed Sinnott. They're in separate rooms at the NovaCare complex because of the surge in coronavirus cases across the country. He says, we're going to make some adjustments. I'm not there 100%, but I don't have to be quite yet with the players not being back yet. But we're going to definitely make more adjustments. Quarterbacks will be in separate rooms. We're going to be even more safe with them being in separate rooms, according to Nick Sirianni. So that's what they're doing. So they're going along with that route. Donovan Smith, Chris Godwin, Kyle Carter were all at Penn State's practice yesterday, full practice today. Jack and I will be at the walkthrough tomorrow, and then I'll be at the practice on Friday. And Bruce Arians, by the way, speaking of Tampa, in isolation, said he tested positive on Tuesday. He's isolating at home. Says he's okay. He has mild symptoms, mostly just a cough. So Harold Goodwin is handling Arians' duties on an interim basis. It's not like Arians doesn't have has not had problems. He has multiple health issues in his career: prostate cancer, skin cancer, renal cell carcinoma. I mean, so you know, he's had some comorbidities along the way. All right, let's get into football now with our mystic from the South, our good friend Reginald Waka. Waka. Let's take you back to your career. Say things really worked out great here, and you had your a fabulous career where you were, you know, a 3,500-yard, 4,000-yard guy, whatever it may be, and a bowl game came up, and it wasn't a college football playoff game. Would you have opted out?
Personally, I think with what I know now, I probably would.
Yeah.
What I knew then, no. And the reason why I say that is because back then, all you knew was to either to play and get the insurance policy in the process, right? The first one we really kind of saw
right.
or heard about was Willis McGahee in 01 or 02 after he tore his knee up against Ohio State.
Yes, yep. Yep.
That was kind of the first one that was public. Now, us as players, sort of on the inside of it, we knew of those things going on and how those policies kind of work based on draft projections and those types of things and position information. But all we knew was play and get the insurance policy.
Yeah,
right. And you're fine.
Right, because the insurance policy thing probably predated you by about 20 years.
Yep.
It probably predated you by 20 years. So now let's go. Let's take this one step further. A year ago on this show, I, you know, and this is months before they brought it out, I said maybe I ought to go to a 12-team playoff. Now I think maybe I ought to go to a 16-team playoff, and here's my reasoning behind that. All right, two reasons: one, nobody's going to opt out, and number two, you need to keep yourself academically eligible.
Right, right. That's a great point because. You mentioned the academically eligible thing. The guy that kind of changed that around, if you go all the way back, right, into the late 80s, early 90s, people forget, Deion Sanders took all incompletes and played in Florida State's bowl game.
Yep.
That was his way around it.
Yep.
And so there's, you're absolutely right, the eligibility piece, especially with APRs and how that works now as well, would certainly be a factor. Not only for the kids, but also for the coaches in those programs saying, hey, we got to watch our APR score because there's a lot of things tied to that, not necessarily forgetting the fact that if you're a 6-6 football team or, you know, you lose a game somehow in the year and you're a 5-6 football team, if your APR is near the top, you're bowl eligible,
that's
which
right.
means coaches get bonuses, you get another opportunity, 15 more practices with your players. All of those types of things, and it probably will save some jobs as well.
Yeah, because I'm looking at it as, number one, that no player has ever opted out of a playoff game. Right? So that's one. Number two, to play in the playoff game, you have to be academically eligible to do it. In other words,
right.
you just can't sit there and go, hey, look, you know, I blew off classes the last, you know, 6 weeks, whatever, because, look, I'm going to the draft, blah, 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 you know. You and I have heard all that song and dance forever. Well, now you're looking around, you got your teammates looking at you and say, what do you mean you're not eligible? What's wrong with you?
Right.
I think that plays, that's why. Now, how many teams do you think should be in it?
I think they can do eight, and I think they can do eight easily. What you do, and this gives you the wiggle room, right? I think, obviously, the championship weekend stays where it is, right?
Yep.
So let's just say, for the sake of argument, December 4th, right, this year. And then 2 weeks later, you play the first round of the playoffs at top four seed home sites, December 18th-ish,
yep.
right? So you've given that Heisman week, all the awards, all that stuff, that time is off. And then the players are essentially home for Christmas, right? If they want to go home for a couple days, and then they're back, they go to the semifinals, neutral site, New Year's Eve time frame-ish. And then I prefer New Year's Day personally, but that's just me.
Right.
And then you play the national championship 1 week later on January 8th. I don't think you keep moving it to the 15th at all. And I think if you do that, you're allowing those bye weeks to make sure everybody's as healthy as possible. And then I think you can finagle some things on the front end of the schedule. I think if you stay at 12 games, I think you start the season a week earlier to allow for a second bye, just in case, or you eliminate one non-conference game so we stop getting some of these games that don't matter to us. And you tell everybody, obviously you need to play one sort of like-minded opponent, right? So if you're a Big Ten team, you need to play an SEC team or a Big 12 team or something to that effect. And then if you want to play a bye game, you can play a bye game. And now with the nine games left, you can play a conference slate.
I think you make an interesting point, several interesting points there. But one of them is that I like is that if you want to build the playoff, okay, I like the idea of a second bye week for everybody. So it's, yeah, sure, it's a little more spread out, but I think it's important to give players, student athletes, that extra week somewhere in the schedule.
Yeah, and what it does is it basically allows every coach or every athletic director, whoever's handling those schedules, and the conference to give you one kind of early and give you one kind of late.
Yeah.
In a perfect world, you can play one after week, get one after week four or your fourth game, and get one after your seventh game or eighth game, right, and then you finish out the regular season somewhere in that range.
Right, that's a good point. All right, so let's get to some of these games. Georgia. So I want to ask you about Stetson Bennett. It's interesting. I just talked about Keaton Slovis moments ago. And Slovis got his chance to play because JT Daniels got hurt. Okay, so Slovis plays, does well. Daniels looks around, says, oh, he's the victim, Pac-12 freshman of the year. I'm going to transfer out. He goes to Georgia. Then he gets hurt there. Stetson Bennett takes over, blah, blah, blah. We know how it turned out. Then Daniels, of course, did a good job against Cincinnati in the Sugar Bowl last year. Is Bennett good enough? I mean, he's good enough for them to beat Tennessee, and he's good enough for them to beat Florida. But is he good enough on this stage?
I know they love his feet, and there's nothing wrong with that. He can run the football better, obviously, than JT Daniels. But the issue this team had early in the season, when you look at JT Daniels before he got hurt, and then obviously right after, was a lot of the pass catchers were hurt. Now those guys are back. You got Pickens back. The tight ends are healthy. Now you need a guy that can spread it around and use all those weapons and force your defense to give away kind of what they're doing and allow him then to pick apart those teams. I don't think Stetson Bennett is as good at that. They obviously value Stetson Bennett's legs, but let's call it what it is. The teams that have beat, right, Michigan, which is Michigan State, they don't have a quote-unquote mobile quarterback. They have a guy who can read the defense, make the right throws, and work off of play action, which is where Georgia's at their best. Cook at that running back spot, Zamir White, who I saw play in high school, that guy's unbelievable.
Yeah.
But Cook as well, people forget, James Cook is the brother of Dalvin Cook.
Right.
So we know the pedigree of that family. That kid's a nightmare as well. I think you use those two running backs with JT Daniels to set up play action and allow him to take shots down the field, and you got a chance to win a national championship. You don't, then you're relying on Stetson Bennett to run around and make plays improvising. I just don't think that's the right formula against the Michigan defensive front that can chase him down just as well as they can get to JT Daniels in the backfield. But Daniels does a better job recognizing different blitz packages and getting the football out.
Yeah, you know what struck me about Georgia when they played Alabama? And I want to see if you thought the same thing. Yeah, you know, I watched Georgia play some games, including the Arkansas game, obviously. Against Alabama, they look slow.
They did. They didn't look like the faster, more athletic team.
No.
They also looked a little bit intimidated. They looked like they didn't expect to win the game. It's almost like they had heard about Alabama all year, and then I always use this analogy. Then it goes back to like the national championship game where Alabama played Notre Dame. And remember, Notre Dame's locker room was closer to the field. They were supposed to walk out first. And Nick Saban jumped the gun on purpose, and they walked by Notre Dame in the tunnel. And it's like Notre Dame had seen Alabama on tape and said, yeah, they're pretty fast. And then they walked past them and realized they were big and fast, and they went, whoa. That's not what we expected. It's almost like Georgia saw kind of the same thing, and in the second quarter, it just overwhelmed them, and that game was over.
And the guy that struck me was Davis, the big kid in the middle. Was he 360 pounds?
Yeah, big Jordan Davis.
Yeah, all of a sudden, and everybody's talked about him. And then I'm watching him in this game, and he's standing up, not moving. I'm thinking, that's not good. It's not good football.
No, I mean, his leverage was bad. The Alabama offensive line that we talk about all the time, and Steve, you know this, that the hardest thing to find now in recruiting is people moving offensive linemen.
Yep.
Right? Alabama continues to find the four or five people movers in every recruiting class. That's what they have. And 360, 340, 380, it doesn't matter. They are able to move those guys off of the spot and run the football, which sets up that passing game. I think it's going to be interesting, though, to watch them against Cincinnati, because these are two teams that will spread it out and throw it around. I think this will be a more, quote-unquote, exciting game of the two. Don't know what the score is going to look like. It may be one-sided, but you're going to see two teams open it up versus the Georgia-Michigan game. I think you're going to see that game played in a phone booth, and that one's going to be – it's a good thing that one's the second semifinal, because your New Year's Eve plans are safe, because that game's going to be about 2.5 hours.
Yeah, that's exactly right. In fact, you may have overestimated. What I find interesting is you do things out of necessity. So why did Mouse Davis go to the run and shoot? He didn't have any tight ends. Right? So he went to the run and shoot. Okay? Really, wow, this is novel. He looked around and says, I did it out of necessity. I've always felt that the spread came into being because I've always felt that back then when they put it in, coaches were trying to work around their offensive line. And I think that's been the MO since.
Well, yeah, if you go back to the Mike Leach days at Texas Tech, that's the best example, and the reason why I say that is go back and look at the tape and look how wide those offensive linemen splits were. That was to force the defensive ends further out so they couldn't get to the quarterback as quickly. That's what that was about. That's what you see a lot of spread teams do. They stretch out the offensive line horizontally, and they make you have to come further to get to the quarterback, and then you add in things like bootlegs and waggles and sprint outs and rollouts, it makes it harder for defensive linemen to figure out where the quarterback's going to be.
Happy holidays, my good friend. Great to have you with us.
Thank you, Steve. Always a pleasure. Happy holidays, and take care of yourself. Take care, everybody, and I love State College. I will leave it there.
Waka. I heard that a few times in the practice. Waka.
Oh, yeah.
You're the best. Thanks so much.
Thank you. Take care. Happy holidays.
Reginald Walker joining us on the show. Next half hour, by the way, Neil Coulong on the Steelers, who put together just an awful performance on Sunday at Arrowhead against the Chiefs. It was just phenomenally bad. And Neil and I will break down that phenomenally bad performance in the next half hour. Yikes. They've got Cleveland on Monday Night Football, by the way. And that's what they have coming up. More bowl games today. Again, I always go back to the point about bowl games. What's interesting about bowl games, people talk, too many. And we all know the Holiday Bowl was canceled last night. And it canceled the doggone thing. About 4.5 hours before kickoff? Because UCLA didn't have enough defensive linemen because of COVID. And there are other reasons as well. But the Liberty Bowl, Birmingham Bowl, First Responder Bowl, Guaranteed Rate Bowl all went. So 18 of the 23 games have been played. And there's more on the schedule, obviously, for today. But they're doing great in the ratings. Of the 18 that have been played, 16 of the 18 have had 1 million viewers or more. I'm sorry. People are watching it. And they may poo-poo this and poo-poo that, but guess what? People, every year this comes up. And every year, people watch because they don't really know who all the players. No, I was watching Louisville and Air Force yesterday afternoon. So I'm watching that yesterday afternoon. I'm like, I don't really know too much about either of these teams, just the basics. And I just watched because it was a game. All right. Neil Coulong next hour on the Steelers. They get ready for the Browns. We'll talk to him, brought to you by Sunbury Motors. On News Radio 1070 WKOK.